Okay, I'll take a question if anyone's, any quick questions? Yeah.
It was kind of the same question from earlier.
Yeah.
About the motivation.
Yes.
Change, being able to kind of to like, there's a lot of lessons to learn, but it's also, I think it's harder to implement those. I guess, do you have any advice on that?
Well, you know, it is very hard. The Vilna Gaon writes that to change a negative characteristic is more difficult than learning the whole Talmud. So this is not an easy process. And again, I don't want to pretend that, you know, I have mastered this. All of us are working on this, and all of us have many, many failings. But like anything else, you know, you try to train yourself to be a giver in small ways. For example, you know, if there's a student event in the Hillel, you know, you stay up afterwards to clean up. Just kind of train yourself. And even if it seems like a bother and you don't want to do it, but the more you do repetitive actions of going beyond yourself and caring about other people, you acquire. It's like the body trains the mind. Instead of saying, I act because I feel a certain way, we actually say, act and then you'll feel. So you train yourself. There's a very excellent book. I mean, I mentioned this author already, David Brooks, and this is not a Jewish, certainly it's not a Jewish book. But you know, he made that distinction in eulogy virtues and resume virtues. But he wrote a whole book about developing moral character. And I think that since it doesn't require any background in Jewish texts, I think it would be a very, very useful book to read. He talks about the fact that good people are not necessarily born, they are made. It's not that people are born naturally wonderful, but they make decisions in life, and slowly over a period of time, they become a certain type of good person because they behave that way. And we do believe very much, this is a teaching of the Torah, that it is your deeds that influence your thoughts even more than your thoughts influence your deeds.
I'm curious, the whole relationships, not just between man and woman, between man and man and God, is there a distinction or a difference between giving charity to strangers and giving charity to friends and family?
Well, this is an interesting point. You know, the old colloquial saying, charity begins at home, is actually true according to Jewish law. You know, it's very, very interesting. We often tend to be much more generous and giving to strangers than to our own family. Everyone is familiar with the phenomenon that I'm the nicest guy in the world to every guy in the street, but when I get home, I'm tense and nervous, and I yell at my wife and my kids. Judaism says exactly the opposite. You got to start with those who are closest to you, and then you work outwards. If you cannot be kind to your wife and your children, then your kindness to everybody else doesn't matter very much. And therefore, charity does begin at home, but it begins at home, it doesn't end at home, and then it should broaden out eventually. There's a story about Leo Tolstoy. Leo Tolstoy, the author of War and Peace, was a Russian count in the Tsarist aristocracy, and he owned a lot of serfs. These were the slaves. But he also wrote little booklets calling for the abolition of serfdom. So somebody once asked him, Count Tolstoy, you're such a humanitarian, why do you still have slaves? So Tolstoy responded, just because I'm a lover of humanity doesn't mean I have to care about human beings. And what he was saying, he knew what he was saying. He was saying somewhat sarcastically, I'm a lover of a global cause, but it doesn't translate into the here and now. And that's often the case. People can sometimes wax so eloquent about, I love humanity, I want to improve the human race, I want to improve the world. But they're very nasty to the people they see every day. Judaism says, before you move to globalism, try to work with the here and now, and then you broaden yourself. And that's really kind of the lesson.
When it comes to Jewish tradition regarding marriages and like arrangements, is it more valuable to find a partner from a third party, or would it be considered more important to be actually in love with each other?
Well, here's the thing. This very much depends on different cultures. Meaning to say, in the Hasidic world, even to this very day, although it's changing, the concept would be much of the marriages are arranged marriages. But God forbid, that doesn't mean there's no love. Again, when people have the identical value systems and those are checked out and they have the same goals in life, they will come to love each other because they share a vision of what their life is like. and they don't get distracted by extraneous factors. So there's holiness in that. On the other hand, you know, we are victims of our culture. If you were raised in a culture in which you really have to know the person first, then I think it would be wrong to switch to the other modality, because the other modality could be very frustrating, and if you weren't raised that way. So as a result, in the modern Orthodox world, it's a little confusing. It's kind of a composite system, meaning there is a shatran, a matchmaker, who kind of coordinates the dating, but you actually meet the person, go out with them many times. Could be, well, many times, meaning anything from 5 times to 50 times. I mean, there's a big range, how long it takes for people get engaged, but you take the time that's needed. So there is a coordinator, but nevertheless, there's a lot of personal contact as well. Both can work, you know, indeed. Yeah.
You said a man should, marry a woman and not be homosexual, do not be lead on homosexual for that way?
Yes. Again, maybe this is a talk that maybe needs much more time. Judaism understands that some people are attracted to same sex, and Judaism does not blame a person for their sexual attraction. That could either be environmental or genetic, or it could be anything. But it's not anybody's fault. We don't, you know, look down at a person for any feelings that they have. But one of the laws of the Torah is one is not allowed to act in a homosexual relationship. So as a result, there is absolutely no question that the ideal of a sanctified marriage is a heterosexual marriage. Now, where does that leave the homosexual? I'm going to have to leave that for another time. Do we acknowledge the legitimacy of aversion therapy, which can change orientation? Do we require a person to have lifelong abstinence? You know, these are very, very difficult questions. I guess I do want to emphasize that this is the paradigm of hate the sin and not the sinner, meaning to say Judaism does not condone discrimination or hatred or violence against homosexuals, nor would it even support necessarily discrimination in employment and the like. But there's no way that we could endorse as a religious value a homosexual union. That is not the marriage that the Torah sets up, and Leviticus does prohibit homosexual sexual behavior. But again, I think this is a topic that deserves its own treatment, and I'd be happy to elaborate. Okay, anyway, I have to run, but we'll see you tomorrow, and you all have a good rest of the day.